This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 9:09 into the 10 o'clock hour we go, and we're going to talk about vouchers and the Gator program, and I'll start with my piece first while we get our guest, hopefully. And I don't know. Here's my issue. And look, I had a kid that went through private school and paid tuition all the way through Ursuline and then Mount Carmel, and it wasn't cheap. But we sacrificed and did what we had to do. My issue with vouchers is it seems as though by supply and demand, the only thing that it does is props up failing private schools. Now, the governor introduced his Gator program at Rummel. I don't know if Rummel accepts voucher students or not, and I don't know exactly how the Gator program is going to work, but if you're subsidizing parents that are already paying private tuition, then I don't know that that's going to do anything to really help the public education system in the state other than take dollars from that. I think that the way it plays out, the schools that accept voucher students, for the most part, the private schools, are not those that are doing very well. And while it gives a parent a chance to take a child out of public school and put them in a private school, it props up the private school that by market demand in the marketplace would not have been there anyway, but for the voucher dollars, if you understand what I'm saying. So the schools that are doing well are packed with students. They don't take voucher students. The schools, the private schools that are not doing well, take voucher students. But then what happens from that point? Does the quality of education for the child go up any? We're going to spend an hour talking about it. Douglas Harris joins us, professor and chair of Tulane's Department of Economics and director of the Education Research Alliance for New Orleans. Good morning, Douglas. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. I don't know if you could hear any of this or not, but what I was saying is it just seems from a supply and demand marketplace standpoint, the private schools that are doing well in educating the students, they don't need voucher students because they turn people away every year. Conversely, I think vouchers serve in some ways to prop up failing private schools while not increasing the quality of education any and punishing the public school system overall. Am I anywhere close to right on any of that?
Yeah, no, I think the first part is definitely right on, that the vouchers are not going to have much effect, at least on the number of students in the higher performing schools, those that are in high demand. Although it is, especially with the new program, it is going to start sending money to those families. So if the families that are already in private schools or would have attended private schools anyway will end up getting the voucher under the new program that's being put in place.
That's the Gator program. So let's talk about that. Then we're going to work all over the place here, Douglas, if you can bear with me. So the Gator program is going to people that have kids in Jesuit and Sacred Heart, I'm just going to pick two schools at random, they will be eligible to get subsidies for their tuition?
That's what it looks like it will eventually be. So it's a little bit murky because the program is supposed to be phased in three different tiers, and that depends on what the legislature does. It depends on what the state board does. But you know, the goal of the program from the standpoint of the advocates is to make it universally acceptable and accessible to all families, regardless of income, regardless of any other characteristics, the age of the students or anything like that, and to be usable at any religious schools or any other kinds of private schools.
So I'm not picking on Sacred Heart or Jesuit. I just mentioned those because I think those are two of the more popular private schools for boys and girls in the city. But, and again, you said murky, so I don't want to get too lost in the details of the Gator program. But tell me about who accepts voucher students now and who doesn't, or who gets any type. Well, let me check that. Let me go back and go to the inception of this. In Louisiana, the history of vouchers started for parents who didn't want to send their kids to integrated public schools. Is that the truth or not?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that was true throughout the South. That it was an idea that became popular briefly right after Brown v. Board of Education and the desegregation movement. It was initially a way of sidestepping desegregation.
So then take me through the history of vouchers after that.
Well, not much happened because it was so transparently obvious what they were doing, and it was not legal to try to sidestep what the court was saying at that point, that the idea pretty much died for decades until really the early 2000s, when you started to see another Supreme Court decision that opened the door for vouchers. There's always been a separation of church and state element to this debate because of sending government funds to private schools and religious schools. And so the Supreme Court changed its mind basically in a Cleveland voucher case in the early 2000s, and that opened the door legally speaking. And then you started to see some states, especially Florida, institute some small scale statewide voucher programs. And there's some small city-based programs as well. And then, but those were small. They were targeted usually to students with disabilities or just students in low-performing schools. You know, Louisiana also came into this in the 2010s with the Louisiana Scholarship Program. And but it's really only very recently, just in the last 4 years or so, that we've had these universal voucher programs where, the intent is that everybody will be eligible for them and that all schools will be eligible to receive them.
Let me quote from Patrick Wall's story here from The Advocate, if I may. Parents and kids should not be trapped in a failing school, then Governor Bobby Jindal said, adding that all children deserve an excellent education. One of several Republican-led states to adopt vouchers, Louisiana targeted its program to families with incomes at or below 250%.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The poverty line with children in public schools rated C or lower. Then they had to administer the... Anyway, tell me, I don't want to read the whole story here because I want you to talk, but tell me what happened after Governor Jindal.
Well, that was when the Louisiana Scholarship Program started. That's one that you're describing. And,
right.
And that was an interesting one in a couple different dimensions. One is that they required that the students would take the same test as in the public schools, the LEAP test. And the other is that a lot of the students ended up being essentially going in through a lottery. So they were randomly assigned to receive the voucher. And so from an evaluation standpoint, if you want to understand how a program works, it's a great situation, right? You have an outcome, you can compare the students in private schools to the students in public schools, and you know that they're randomly assigned so that there's no difference between them other than, you know, what shows up in their outcomes and the fact that they attended different schools. And what we learned was that the results were really poor, that students did actually a lot worse. The ones that were randomly assigned to receive the voucher and go to a private school did a lot worse academically than the students who remained behind in public schools.
And would that indicate what we started with, that they were using the vouchers to go to an already failing school, but it was a private school, not a public school?
Exactly, that's right. So I think, as you said a few minutes ago, that the schools that you might have wanted or hoped that students would go to, the higher performing private schools, at least what we think of. We can't really measure the performance of private schools, so that's important here. But the ones that people would typically think of, the ones you mentioned, Jesuit and Sacred Heart and so on, those were not the schools that these students were going to. And you know, there are high performing public schools, low performing public schools. There are also high performing private schools and low performing private schools. And the system is designed to really send the students receiving vouchers to lower performing schools.
Let's talk about who accepts vouchers, or once a private school accepts, can they accept one voucher student, two voucher students? Do they have to accept a percentage? How does that work, Doug?
I don't think there was a limit. I think the schools could set their own limits in terms of, you know, they might only have a certain amount of capacity, so they could say, we'll accept this number of students. And then if more students apply, that's when the lottery would kick in and they would have to randomly assign students to the different schools. So it really wasn't a limit from an individual school standpoint in terms of who participated.
So if I have St. Tommy's School for Kids, okay, and I decide to accept voucher students, I can choose how many I want to accept, and am I getting the full $10,000 a year tuition, and the parent gets a portion of that, and then they have to make up the difference? How does that work?
Well, the current program, the Louisiana Scholarship, is a fixed amount that the state sends to the school, and then that has to cover full tuition, so the school has to accept that as full payment. The Gators program is going to work differently in that that they're going to give the schools a fixed amount, but the schools will be able to top that off with additional tuition. So that'll affect then who can really effectively use the money. So if you're a low-income family, even if you only need to find $1,000 and the scholarship's going to pick up the rest, you still might not be able to find $1,000 to pay the extra tuition to make that work. So
as it stands now, if I'm running St. Tommy's School, that is a business, right? And I do have debt service, and I got to keep the doors open. If I accept a voucher student, I'm not going to get the full tuition that I would get if I have a waiting list of students that want to pay full tuition. Accurate?
Well, it depends on what the tuition level is. Actually, a lot of schools have tuition that's lower than the voucher amount or close enough that they might not really be sacrificing anything in that respect. So it depends on the tuition level. So again, look, you think about the Jesuits and Sacred Hearts of the world, it's not going to cover full tuition there. And so they would the schools would have to change their policies to accommodate this, or again, you might end up with some families who want to go there and can use the voucher but still can't afford the rest of the tuition.
So what is your research on school vouchers found, and are they working in Louisiana?
No, they're not working by the usual academic measures. So again, the test scores I described earlier, things got worse. Yeah, students did worse than if they had stayed behind in public schools. And there was no improvement in, say, college going. So the things that we typically look at that we can measure, things got worse. And that was also true in other states that tried this. Ohio, Indiana, Florida is a little bit of an exception. That's the only state where they've seen any positive effects on college going, but no state has shown any positive effects on test scores. In fact, they all show either no effect on test scores or reductions in achievement.
When you say test scores, the metrics that are used, are they the same for public and private schools, or are they different?
In Louisiana, it's the same. In I think there was one other state where it was the same. In Florida, it's a different test. And actually, with the Gator program that's coming up, it will be a different test. And so, you know, in that respect, we may never know actually how the Gator program is working, because we won't have any way to compare the students who are in that program with those who are in public schools.
So it would be murkier almost?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, really, we may never know whether the program works or not in that respect.
So what is the metric now? They both private and public schools, is it the LEAP test? What do they take?
Correct. That's right.
But when the Gator program kicks in, the private schools will not be taking the LEAP test? Or take me through that.
Correct. Well, it's only the students using the vouchers anyway. So right now, it's not all students in private schools taking the LEAP. It's only those who are receiving the voucher. And then with the Gator scholarship, the students will, again, have to take some sort of a test, but the schools and students will be able to pick the test. So that means it's not going to be comparable in any way to the public schools.
Let me take a break. We'll digest what we've heard so far, pick it up when we come back. We're going to talk to Erin Bendeley in the second half of the hour. She's Vice President for Policy and Strategy at the Pelican Institute. She is strongly pro-voucher, and we'll see what she has to say when we come back after the bottom of the hour. But we have more with Douglas Harris when we return, professor and chair at Tulane's Department of Economics and director of the Education Research Alliance for New Orleans. It seems like we're just laundering money to subsidize parents that want to send their kids to private school. And look, I did it. I made the sacrifice. I didn't drive a brand new car, but the kid got the education that I wanted the kid to have. And I don't know how this is going to change anything, but hurt public schools. We'll see when we come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. All right, 9:30. We're going to talk to Erin Bendeley in a couple of minutes. Give her as much time as we can to talk about the voucher program and the Gator program. Douglas Harris, our guest, professor, chair at Tulane's Department of Economics and director of the Education Research Alliance for New Orleans. Students achieving mastery on state tests, 32% of all public school students, 24% of low-income public school students, 14% of voucher students in private schools. So Governor Landry tweeting that with President Trump, we'll continue working towards education freedom for all. President Trump wants subsidies, private school subsidies, all families, regardless of financial need. When it comes to the new Gator program, when it comes to students receiving vouchers, is there any way, in your opinion, Douglas, that you can see this working, or is it a fatally flawed program?
Well, if the goal is to raise achievement and to increase the usual measures that we look at, then I don't really see a way that this is going to work. I mean, the evidence is pretty clear, and it's clear across states. You know, there are other ways to look at this. You know, the charter schools have been effective in New Orleans, and having some sort of accountability for the program. They're actually reducing the accountability. I mentioned earlier that students aren't going to be taking the same test, so it won't be possible to compare to public schools or really to release any meaningful information to parents to help them make decisions. You know, there's one other element that I know it's going to come up later in your show with the next speaker, which is, you know, the idea that the program, it may say, is overregulated, but the existing one where the results are really poor, that's why the program didn't work. That's the allegation. But there's also no evidence for that either. You know, the problem, it goes back to what you said at the beginning of the show, which is that the schools that you might want the students to move into are very unlikely to accept more students. And that's why schools are not participating. It's not because the program was overregulated. And the way in which it is overregulated, and one thing that schools I think are concerned about, private schools, is that the program doesn't let them pick their own students, right? So private schools have selected admissions, and especially, you know, the more elite, more expensive schools are not letting in all students. Like they're selecting just as, like, colleges will select the students that they prefer. And so you know, that's the regulation that they're talking about. That's what they don't want. They want to be able to pick their students. And I think when you think about the public games.
Go back again on that. Because let me tell you this. When my kid went to school, they had took a test. They had an interview process. Then they decided whether or not to let the kid in the school, right? So is that what they call? Tell me how that relates to regulation.
Well, what the advocates for the voucher program are saying is that the private schools should be able to continue to do that. That's a standard practice in most private schools, is to be able to select students in the way you just described. And with this new program, they're still going to be able to do that. So you might have a voucher, and you might even be able to pay the full amount, even if they charge tuition at a given school, but the school might not let you in. They're not required to let students in.
So then common sense would tell you that the student is going to, and the parents are going to take the voucher money or the Gator money and go to, as we began this interview, with the failing private school already, right? The school is already failed.
Right. Right, and that's the sense in which, you know, the regulation is not the problem. It's just the design of the program is what's going to make, you know, that problem happen. And even if, you know, even setting aside that, the idea that the program is overregulated or highly regulated is misleading, because it really only two rules that matter here. One is the idea that the schools can still, or in the old program couldn't select. So in the old program, even where and the results were really bad there too, they also couldn't select their program. Under the Gator program, they will be able to select. So that's one of the things that's changing that I think people don't really realize, is that that restriction is there, and not everybody's going to get the school that they want. And the other regulation is even having to take the public school test at all. Like, that's considered to be onerous, but it seems pretty basic for an organization receiving public funds.
I have to go here because I want to give Aaron as much time as I can. Real quick, Douglas, is there a scenario under which you see a voucher program working successfully?
If the goal is to improve achievement, no, I don't see a way that there are other goals that you might have, you know, supporting religion and religious organizations and so on, but it's hard to see from an academic achievement standpoint how this would be helpful.
Thank you, Douglas. Appreciate your time. Professor Chair at Tulane's Department of Economics and Director of the Education Research Alliance for New Orleans. I hope Erin Bendeley was listening, because we're going to talk to her. We come back, Vice President for Policy and Strategy at the Pelican Institute, who are very much in favor of vouchers, and the Gator program, 9:35, 25 till 10. Traffic now, WWL.